have like a few beats that I've also submitted to Kenny, the ones that people don't know about. I made it to the finalists like twice before. A few times I was not selected for a few of them. And during that like 2 to 3 week period, I think I was the most miserable I ever was. Like I was so stressed. Like every single Monday during these battles, it felt like this has to be the day where like I earn my like value as a producer or whatever nonsense I was thinking about. And so after the third time where like, I remember it was actually for when Sam Gellatry was judging a battle. Like his eyes just kind of like stared blankly at my track. And I couldn't sleep that night. And
that was Eric Gap, also known as OK Sam, a Los Angeles-based music producer who, let me tell you, is extremely talented. But what's most interesting to me about him is the way he teaches himself to create the crazy, amazing music that he puts together, which we talk about in detail if you stick around. Eric has gained a lot of recognition over the last few months, which he definitely deserves. Most recently, from Timbaland and Kenny Beats for his distinct, colorful, multifaceted arrangements that merge R&B, hip-hop, funk, jazz, and more into some of the bounciest beats out there. He's definitely an inspiration to me, and should be to you if he isn't already. If you don't already know, I'm David Hawkins, and I'm here to help you develop and perfect your creative skills with audiovisual production by sharing the experiences of experts and friends in the industry. So let's get into the episode.
Welcome to the AVPers Audiovisual Production Podcast with David Hawkins, where we team up with industry professionals to help you bring your creative skills to the next level.
Hey everyone, David here from AVPers.com, and welcome to session 4 of the AVPers Podcast. I'm here with Eric, also known as OK Sammy, and I'm just honored to have him here today on the show. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Super busy. I guess for context, right? I'm working my own startup, which I started up with two of my buddies, and it's been doing pretty well. I'm mostly doing software engineering at the moment. So wow. I feel like I'm running like two startups, essentially. One with those guys, and then separately. Now music, since I've gotten, you know, a burst of attention over the past few months. A lot of like opportunities are coming up, which are exciting. But it's literally like as soon as I'm off work, I'm doing music. Not that I'm complaining, but...
Right. No, I didn't know that. That's really cool. I've been keeping up with your work. You have mad skills, man. I really mean that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and for the people listening. Who is OK Sammy?
Yeah. So my name is Eric. I am a 25-year-old producer currently in LA. I am living with my parents due to the quarantine. I used to be up in Oakland and then moved down to save some money. And then probably we'll move out to LA in a little while, but excited to be back down here. I grew up in LA for all my childhood, went up to the Bay for some schoolwork, and worked at some tech companies for a while. And now that there's no need to pay the absurd rent up there, I'm back down. I am excited to be back, and we'll see what happens. I guess also from like a musical background, I grew up with classical piano training. My dad is a professional cellist, so nice. He was also a piano teacher. So it was like impossible for me to not have grown up learning an instrument. As you might expect, I picked up both piano and cello, but piano was the one that stuck with me the most. I just kept that up more consistently. I can't even remember how young it was when I started. I played for about 10 years, but I mean, 6 or 5 years old is pretty young to start off with, and I'm not sure how disciplined I was at that age. It's fuzzy to me. But it's so long ago where I can't even remember like when I really started to play piano, to be honest. And then from there on, like when I was 16, I stopped formally taking lessons. I had a little stint where I was doing some self-taught guitar work and singing. And then in sophomore year of college, I kind of had a brief moment after my internship with Facebook as a software engineer. And at that point, I was like, oh, music's going to be a hobby. I'm just going to do this for fun. And then I was like, do I really want to sit around and code for the next X years of my life? And truth be told, I don't think the answer was yes. It's not like I dislike coding. It's a very fun puzzle-solving type of line of work. I certainly prefer it to, I don't know, any sort of like physical labor, personally. But it's hard to compete with music when it's been one of the most emotionally fulfilling things I've ever done. So I picked up Ableton in 2015 and been working at it since then.
Wait, 2015 is when you started with
producing.
An actual... Oh,
yes,
wow.
Yes.
That's impressive. That's really impressive. So it's been five years and you've gotten...
That seems like a long time to me, but I'll let you decide. Yeah, and I mean, I grew up with a lot of musical foundations, so...
Right.
I feel like it's all kind of been in the works, to be honest.
That's interesting. We seem to have a lot of similarities, to be honest. Who were some of your inspirations, the people that you looked up to growing up when it came to music?
Overall, or would you say like for specifically the production process?
You know what? Let's do both. Like overall inspirations and then specifically producers that inspired you.
Got it. Okay. So pre-production, I'd say it was about seventh grade where I started actually developing my own music tastes. And that came in the form of a lot of alt rock, such as like Muse, Foo Fighters, The Bravery. I remember like literally binging the albums, and it was like nothing I had ever heard at the time. I just listened to like the pop radio. But for the first time, I had like music that I was proud to share. And so it felt really good. And you start curating your own library of music. You start developing your taste, which is actually quite an important step, I think, in becoming a producer. I didn't have that sort of identity with my own library that I would want to have been a producer as much as I did. But yeah, that slowly transitioned into like wider and wider genres. Daft Punk, I think, as for many people, was my gateway into electronic music. And into the French house stuff. And surprisingly, it was the Gorillaz, whose only song that I knew at the time was Feel Good Inc. They had just put out Plastic Beach. I listened to it. I didn't like it. It was so weird. And then for some reason, I just kept the album in my library. And one day, like, I don't remember the context. It just played the first song. And I was just like, I was too lazy to skip it. And suddenly it played through the entire concept album. And my mind was blown. I was like, wait a second, why did I not like this? Like every single song is like part of this cohesive theme. There are bits and pieces of these songs, even the songs I don't like, there are parts of it which I just absolutely love and are worth listening to anyways.
Yeah.
And so I sat through their entire discography and I was like obsessed with them for a little while. And so I actually did try to pick up production. This was around like mid to late high school with FL Studio. And no offense to anyone who uses FL Studio, but I think it stopped me from like creating stuff. I picked it up a few times. I did it twice. I remember both in high school. I tried it once, made some like hot garbage, and I was, you know, it was so bad to the point, this is going to be important because my self-awareness was, it was so bad where my self-awareness could detect that it was bad. And so when you see that as a beginner, it's very discouraging.
Right.
And you know, the learning curve is high. You're learning about synths and like sound design. And I'm like, you don't know where to start. It's so easy just to look up how to produce music and get misled into 100 different avenues.
That's
and so overall I had that spark in me, but I didn't get through the learning curve twice. I gave it about 2 to 3 weeks of effort, you know, sometimes made something that I got excited by and then listened the next day. And I was like, this is complete trash. I don't want to do this anymore. So yeah, that was pretty much it pre-production. After 2015, you know, when I really started getting into SoundCloud, I know there's like a golden era of SoundCloud. I kind of started really diving in at the tail end of that. But at the time, Lido still is quite huge. Lido has been a persistent inspiration for me, just in terms of pure like artistic and technical execution. He's amazing. Other producers include, there was an Australian producer named Swindale who did a heavy percussion-based production. Okay. He's taken a bit of a hiatus, but he and also Sam Gellatry, a lot of these folks seriously opened my eyes into what people were capable of making as like a pure production flex. Because radio play and the stuff you hear there, there's a certain structure to it.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go too bombastic and too wild.
Yeah.
But here these guys were like flexing off their chops. And I was like, you know, it's not just like it's not even that they're just trying to toss in complicated ideas and, you know, making stuff hard or seem like complex for the sake of it. It's extremely listenable.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I quite enjoy it. And so that showed me like as a producer where the ceiling was.
Yeah.
And it was so far up. But that's what you kind of have to wrestle with your entire career, or even just in general with any sort of creative aspirations, right? You always have your taste and you always see the gap between you and where you could go and who, where your idols already are. And if you let that get to you, it can be highly discouraging.
That's true.
So that's kind of where I was at during that time. Now there's like, I'm on like 5 different flavor of the month every month. People are always showing me new music and I love hearing it. And I'm always like trying to cherry pick things that other producers are doing. I literally have my own list of things, of songs where it's called Things I Don't Know How to Make.
Okay.
So it's a really good exercise, I think, to be able to identify, yes, the gap is there, but you know, if I apply some effort, slowly you'll chip at it. And more importantly, you'll be able to bring those influences into your own sound, which is where I think true creativity and uniqueness comes from.
See, and that's something I think a lot of people could learn from. You force yourself or you motivate yourself to hear the things that you don't know how to do and say, okay, that's what I want to do.
Yes.
Something that I did a lot. I literally, if there was a song I really liked and I liked the way it sounded, I would pull it into my DAW and I would literally make it beat for beat, sound for sound, exactly like the other one. Not to bite off of them, but just to learn the techniques, learn the skills. That way I could, you know, have those skills under my belt once I was done.
No, absolutely.
And that helped me so much.
That I feel like that can't be understated. And you made a really interesting remark about how you weren't trying to like blatantly copy from them. You're trying to understand the techniques and develop a similar intuition. I think what bothers me when I listen to something that someone else made and I can't make it, this is not, I'm not obviously not bothered that they're like better or they're making something I can't make. I'm very intrigued by the fact that I would have never come up with it. Like your mind tends to form in, I feel like you can easily get into these creative loops. I'll find myself reaching for the same sounds, reaching for the same chords, reaching for the same post-processing effects. And so forcing yourself to A, figure out what these guys are doing that works in a different way or works just as well as your existing workflow. It's honestly incredibly refreshing. This is like my number one way to beat writer's block is to literally just pick a song you don't know how to make and figure out why it is that one, maybe you could have thought of the idea, but you don't know how to execute it. But
right.
The more interesting ones are the ones where like, I would have never even thought about creating this. Like you could put me in a room for like 10 years with the current set of tools I have. I would make nothing like this. And so whenever you hear something like that, it raises some flags in my head. And I'm like, how do I develop a process where it's a little more conducive for me to come up with things like this? So
yeah,
I think this all wraps into doing this will not make you a carbon copy of someone. Doing this will in fact help blend their influences into yours and overall make more interesting products, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I agree totally. Your style, in my opinion, I'm sure you'd agree, it's like a mixture of cinematic, funk, R&B, lo-fi, and hip-hop, at least currently, what I've been hearing from you. And
that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and I've like binged on all your content. I actually found, I'm pretty sure that I've heard of you before, probably from the Deadmau5 when he played your beat.
Oh man, that was a while ago. Yeah, that was the first taste of I think, the sound that was coming out. But sorry, please continue.
No, it's okay. And I never really heard of you after that, but then you've been doing a lot of Kenny Beats battles and getting a lot of recognition from those.
Yeah.
And then Timbaland played your beat on one of his streams and liked it so much that he went and got the freaking alien.
Yeah.
You know, so you've gotten a lot of recognition since then, but what makes you stand out like that? To where, and I ask this because there's a lot of talented producers. You can go on SoundCloud or even on Spotify and listen to tons of producers. To be honest, even the music that you can listen to on the radio, that they're talented, they're great. But then every once in a while, you hear somebody who just has a totally distinct sound. It's not quote unquote better than anybody else, but it's distinct, it's different, and that makes it 100 times better than theirs because it's not the same. It's different, but it's playable on the radio. What gives you that distinction?
Man, this is a rough question to answer. It's mostly hard for me because personally, I'm not sure myself. It feels like it's slowly eased in from the perspective of me, someone who's writing this. I know exactly whose sound influenced what parts of the track. And so if you point at a track and tell me, you know, who inspired this, I'll list off everything. I'll even point to you exact timestamps of a song where they did an effect or in a certain sound. And I was like, I want to have this effect. And so
that's really neat.
I guess, you know, maybe this is to the point of like how, you know, hybridizing so many things ends up creating its own, something with a life of its own. Because to me, it's still like, I still see the base ingredients, you know, I know the recipe, so it's not that interesting to me. But right. To maybe a third party, it sounds quite different. It's hard to shake off that subjective bias. The second thing, I guess I would wager, I will try to take a stab at the question, not just blow it off. It's like, oh, I don't know. I think overall, like there was a distinct moment where I had I believe around last year or earlier last year, I have like a full project I want to execute still. And so okay. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the show Samurai Champloo. It's an anime, which is this anachronistic show about like feudal Japan with samurais, etc. But the entire soundtrack is done by Nujabes, who's unfortunately passed away. But he's basically him and Jay Dilla have kind of been considered to be, you know, the two fathers of the lo-fi scene. You know, I started listening to him in high school, not even knowing that his music was part of a TV show soundtrack. And usually when you listen to a movie soundtrack or a TV soundtrack, the emotions they try to evoke are very strong, and they sometimes can do it. Like, just imagine, like, I don't know, like a Transformers movie, you know, they're going to be playing like crazy high impact sounds during the action scenes, playing some like really sad violin ballad during the sad scenes. It's like very obvious what you should be feeling. But suddenly these guys put lo-fi on action sequences on like moodier scenes. And I was like, this is giving me emotions that aren't even defined. Like they're starting to find different colors within the emotional spectrum that I don't think you would have found if you had gone with a more traditional compositional mindset. I was so intrigued by that. And like that was what set the basis of where my sound is now. And I think where I still want it to develop. Like I literally said, I wanted to write tracks that functioned perfectly well just listening to them on their own, because sometimes I feel like it's a little cheesy to just go rip off a movie soundtrack and listen to it. Like it's epic and like strong, but it's like I don't want to listen to that while I'm walking down the street or driving down the road. Like I want to listen to, you know, more casual things. However, I feel like there's a missed niche, which is that a lot of the tracks in R&B and hip hop have these like fantasy world building vibes to them that I don't see explored that much. And so that sort of set the entire tone. And maybe that's been what's driving the sense of uniqueness, is my deliberate effort to try to write music that can function kind of in both worlds, both as a casual listen and as a pairing with a scene or a visual.
That's really interesting, because now listening to, or in my mind's ear, listening to your tracks with that in mind, that opens up kind of a whole nother dimension for me, because I can hear that now in them. And I didn't hear that before. And
that's awesome.
I don't know how weird that sounds. I've literally like, I've got a playlist with your stuff on Spotify that I listen to during the day. It's crazy. So I love it. I really do. Something I noticed about your songs that's really intrigued me, and I think I asked you this on Twitch too.
Mm-hmm.
Your songs, a lot of them sound sampled, and I'm sure a lot of them are sampled, but many of them aren't. They aren't sampled. Yeah. You've literally created that chopped sample sound by playing instruments with your VSTs and your instruments in your DAW. How do you do that? How do you get that drop sample sound, and why do you do that?
That's a great question. I guess maybe I'll start with the why. Well, number one was I started off and I was just like, I'm very like stubborn when it comes to production. Hence why, if you ever watch my workflow, like it bothers me to not be able to do something. And so you probably see this as a running theme. Like it's bothering me that I can't do something that someone else did. And so if I do figure out, like, you know, say I'm listening to like Chance the Rapper's production or Brass Tracks production, if you're familiar with them, they have like these awesome horn licks. Well, guess what? I don't know how to play trumpet, nor do I have a trumpet player on hand. Right. Logically, like the next step is, well, what can I do to try to emulate the trumpet as best as I can? Well, try to find like a trumpet VST and then see how to like fine tune it so that it sounds as realistic as possible, up to a point where, you know, I'll never get close to the real thing, but it's good enough. And so that's kind of a running philosophy under why I do the things that I do. It's just like literally brute forcing it until I find a solution. So the second problem that came up was like, well, I love Ninja Bez, I love Dilla stuff. I don't want to get into copyright issues,
right?
Which are probably, you know, I've seen like the restrictions are kind of more loose than I expected them to be. But as someone who was just like starting, I was just like, well, I don't want to not be able to put something on Spotify because, you know, I didn't clear it.
Yeah.
Thus began the journey of like, how do I actually, you know, recreate these samples? And actually, to that point, there was a moment where I thought Nujabes wrote all of those orchestral components. So I was just like, oh, I got to like get really good at composing all of these samples and then resampling them. I literally didn't know they sampled the music. So I was like, well, I just got to write it out myself like they did.
Yeah.
Turns out that wasn't the case. But, you know, that exercise, I think, makes you stronger as a producer. So yeah, that's sort of the why. Mostly copyright issues and just having like a desire to get around any sort of problem I come up with, to be honest. And how you do it, I would say two main things. One is first getting that, you know, lo-fi aesthetic, right? The things that are sampled are often not going to be as clean as the production you hear today. So you need to dirty it up. And so, you know, the most abused tape plugin right now is probably RC20, yeah, if you're familiar with that. Yeah, and so you just put a little vinyl crackle on it, low pass it a little bit. Make sure the sound's not too wide, get some of that tape flutter on it. And honestly, it sounds fantastic when you process like anything through it. So like I'm super guilty of abusing this plugin as well.
I've been abusing it lately myself.
The second one was getting the kind of analyzing why something sounds sampled. Something sounds sampled because it's starting from a point of a song where it usually isn't starting. And so especially if you listen to some of the stuff. Oh, man, like the intro to J Dilla's Donuts, maybe you can toss it in this as like an interlude or something for reference. But like you'll listen to how suddenly I love like the soul choir samples, where they're using the soul choir as like a pad. And so to do that, you have no attack and you have almost no release. That is, I think, the second critical thing.
Okay.
So this is the even weirder part about the sampling workflow that I do. And I think it's you don't have to copy this, but I try to actually play my instruments like it's sampled. I think a smarter workflow is actually just to write out a little snippet and then literally just go resample that in audio, because then you'll get all those effects. But for some reason or another, I just didn't want to do that. So now I tune all my instruments to sound like they're suddenly jumping in and suddenly dipping out. So when I play it on the piano, I can literally play it to sound like it's sampled, where it's like chopped.
Right.
I would say the processing and then sort of the tails and transients of your samples or what you're playing helps a lot in being able to craft that sort of homebrewed sample aesthetic.
Well, that's really neat. And I think that's amazing. A lot of producers have things that they do that are out of the ordinary. Nobody else would do that. And I think that's great.
Yeah.
I think that's probably something I'm going to try to learn to do myself, because I think it's a skill to have. Like you said, also playing the whole thing and then chopping it yourself. But that's even another skill to have under my belt. That's incredible. And something that you said, that the transients they don't really have an attack and release because they're chopped out of the middle of something. And I never really thought about that before either. So that's really neat. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, typically you don't have to think about it because you're not going through this hassle of like making your own sample. So when you naturally like slice something up or put it into, you know, whatever sampler you're using, yeah, it's already choosing those chopped points. You play it and it's just like blasting at you. But then I was like playing my piano, I was like, what? It doesn't sound sampled. And so I had to like break it down essentially and figure out why.
That's really neat. When you come up with ideas, how do you come up with ideas? Something that a lot of people ask me is, how do I come up with ideas? Do I start with lyrics? Do I start with drums? And it's always different for me. How do you come up with ideas and then sculpt and shape them into what they turn out to be?
That's a really good question. This sort of ties in with writer's block. And a lot of people ask me like, hey, I'm in like a desert right now of inspiration, and I'm just in the longest writer's block. How do I get out of it? I don't think my answer is going to be suitable for everyone, but seriously, like, I get so excited when I hear ideas that I haven't heard before, or even I go and re-listen to my own library within my own set of songs. You know, I listen to so many artists. There's so many cool things that I have no idea how to make, especially stuff like, you know, with like a lot of the French house artists whose sound I absolutely adore. I haven't really dived into it as much as I'd like to.
Gotcha.
And so in the worst case where you're literally just like, nothing is coming to me, I think making a technical exercise out of it, and again, doing what you said, recreating the beat, you'll naturally start introducing imperfections in, you know, a human inability to copy things perfectly. And what you're hoping for is that you start hearing something else derived out of that process of replication. Pulling back from there, though, typically I'm not operating at that desperate of like an inspirational low. I am generally, I still am operating with the same principle, which is that I pick an anchor point. I used to not do this. Sometimes when you're faced with the open canvas, it's incredibly overwhelming. And I've heard this a lot, and it seems super counterintuitive. But some of the best things that have come out have been due to putting creative limitations on me. And okay. I mean, case in point, the Kenny Beats stuff, right? You're forced to work with a sample, which seems like, well, this is awful. I can't execute my ideas. Well, if you're in a moment, the tongue choir, right? And then you like just start messing with it. And it's basically a little guide for you. It's like the first step of something that you don't have to take. And sometimes the first step is the hardest one, because if you set a poor foundation, you know, you might not be able to continue off of it as effectively as you would when someone's just like forcing you to do something. So I've kind of adopted that mindset recently. So I won't go so far to always pick a sample to start off writing with, but I think it's important to pick different anchor points. What does that mean? I guess for the most recent example, I was listening to Anderson .Paak's Oxnard album. Some of the production on his stuff was so good. And so, like, a lot of my ideas simply just come from, I would like to make something like this. That simple statement sparks a flurry of me listening to the track, of taking notes on like, what sort of drums are they doing? What do I love about the drums? What do I love about the way they're transitioning between their sections? You know, what are some really cool ideas they're pulling in? Kind of abstracting a little bit. So hearing like, well, what is it exactly that I like? You know, I can't just say something as broad as, well, I just like the song. And I can't be as specific as like, I love all these, this specific drum pattern and the chords, because then you're starting to get a little too close to the actual song. I would say like, I love the way maybe the brass has like this, does this counterpoint with the main melody, or I love the way, I love how detailed the drums are in here. I would like to work in a little more percussion and ghost notes into my percussion to try to keep up with like whatever Anderson .Paak can do. And so those little, you know, markers in the song, they're like micro influences, and I'll pull a bunch of them from a song and then start working them into a track. And before you know it, I already have a baseline of like things that I like to use, cinematic orchestration, a set of instruments that I know work well together. Like, you start blending that in, and it lets you get out of your comfort zone in a very controlled way. So I would say a lot of my more recent stuff has come from like, you know, yeah, pulling one anchor point or a set of anchor points and trying to draw in between them. And I think that helps a lot, because you're defining, you're letting your canvas be a little more defined before you start to work on it, which gives you a lot more direction and less sort of experimentation. There's certainly merit to just having nothing and starting from scratch. But when you really just feel like in the mood to like, you know, get something out and work on something that you would feel excited about, I found this process to be really conducive to that.
Sweet. No, that's really great too, because you gotta, I don't remember exactly who it was that said that art is nothing but politely stealing from other people's work. And that's a bit extreme, but I mean, we're all inspired by other people. And if you can use that inspiration to build something else, that's great. I mean, there's going to be times when you're throughout the day doing work, or you're in the shower and all of a sudden an idea comes in your head and you don't know where it came from, and you're trying to quickly write it down or record it on your phone or something, because that inspiration can hit from a lot of different places.
Exactly.
So, you know, you don't have to start with drums. There's no rule that says you have to start with drums or you have to start with a sample. you could start with wherever that inspiration comes.
Exactly. I totally agree.
Yeah. Something I like about your tracks, they are never, ever boring. Oh, they're not boring. Thank you. And I think I've heard a lot of other people's music. It's great, but once you've heard the first half, you've heard the whole song. You know what I mean? But yours, they're constantly captivating your attention. And just when you feel like you've understood the essence of the track, you flip it on its head with some crazy chord change or some crazy instrument comes in or something. What? How? Just how?
It's weird to say this, but it's almost a blessing and a curse. If you listen to some of my favorite production with vocalists on it, you know, art totally can get away. Like, just imagine like lo-fi hip hop, right? You can just loop it and let the vocalist sort of define the segments of the song, and it works fantastically well. But pulling back from that, I guess, yeah, it felt like necessary because of how I wasn't able to find vocalists when I was starting out. And so I either had remixes, which I loved doing because that meant I didn't have to work as hard making the track interesting and could let the vocals carry it. But without a remix, I actually didn't have that many vocalists on hand for, you know, the first 3 or 4 years I was working. It came as like kind of out of necessity, in my opinion, because like you said, I would listen to the first half of the track. It never occurred to me that to loop it, because I would recognize like, well, I'm in the second half now. It sounds exactly the same. It just wasn't interesting to me. And I think this actually ties back into some of my influences. Like, I probably pulled this from like people like Sam Gelatry. You listen to one of his tracks, you might see a lot of that, you know, constant sonic interest everywhere. Like his tracks just don't feel like ABABC in terms of the sections, you know. He's like morphing the entire thing so that once you're at the end, it's not even like the beginning anymore. And yet at the same time, like, he's retained some sort of theme within his writing and his production, which I found incredible. So it really was like listening to artists like that and saying the same question, like, how, right? And sort of like referencing, well, what do they change and how far are they bending the track in these sections? Like, how are they able to pull this track further and further from the first thing that you heard while not making it so weird that it feels like a different track entirely? And a lot of it is if you want a technical answer, I think a lot of it comes from getting very, very deliberate about your transitions and being picky about like what elements are showing up again. Revisiting themes is a very, very powerful tool. It's kind of abstract, but even simply bringing back an instrument you heard before, or bringing back a chord progression but with different instruments, like having that sort of sense of familiarity but still switching the whole thing up, I think lends itself a lot to helping your track evolve and grow on its own without like feeling that you have to construct an entirely new idea.
Right. That's incredible. And something that I'm noticing from this conversation and just from other producers that I know and that we're all familiar with, a lot of the great things that make them who they are were born out of necessity. They weren't born because, I mean, they are genius, but I mean, still, it's not like they were some magician that created things. The people that seem to have that distinct sound didn't really have thousands of dollars worth of equipment or a bunch of stuff to make something amazing in their mind.
Yeah.
They started with the bare necessities. And that
absolutely
out of that necessity came creativity and the need to do new things or do weird things that give them the sound that they had.
Yeah.
And I want people to take that away, because a lot of people get so bummed out because they don't have money or they don't have a bunch of stuff to make. In their minds, it takes that to make amazing music, but it doesn't. It doesn't at all.
It doesn't. That is so true. Yeah, I cannot emphasize like how unimportant it is to have like a certain reverb or a certain EQ. Like, there are so many substitutes for different plugins, and like, it's such a mental trap at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Like, my entire library is evidence of this. I just hoarded plugins. I hoarded samples.
Same.
Because one guy said that it was good, and then I did not understand how to use it. And then I used it once, it screwed up the mix or like made the sound like something that I didn't really imagine using, and I just never touched it again.
Yeah.
And so I think having a very reactive approach I think I tell this a lot to people who ask for advice, having a reactive approach to your plugin and hardware purchasing habits is probably the way to go. Like, only get something because you know you need it.
Right.
Like, if you need a really realistic horn, you can grab, like, okay, you can go and get this trumpet sample provided you don't have anyone who can play for you. Or if there's like a very specific effect that, you know, it's a very novel effect and you have a very strong idea for it. Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah.
But besides that, like, hoarding stuff, you know, for the sake of having it, I understand can feel good to sometimes. It's almost like, what is the word? I don't know what to call it. Shopping cart therapy. But like, seriously, you'll make your long-term workflow so much more efficient just by being picky about what you are and aren't using. And that's something I need to clean up myself even.
That's so true. I mean, it's almost like, especially getting started, it's almost like walking into a donut shop with 20 or 30 flavors.
Yeah, right? And it's so fun to like window shop and you're like, you want to try everything. But
yeah, but that can make it to where you don't actually do anything because you're just so overwhelmed with the selections, you know?
Exactly.
Is there anything that stuck throughout your whole musical endeavors from when you started as a kid playing the keys, piano or cello or anything like that, to now, where you are now with production, getting recognized by Kenny Beats or Timbaland or anything like that? Is there anything that stuck with you as a lesson? Like, I'm glad I learned this and this is going to kind of carry me. What's the most important thing you've learned pretty much?
There's actually something very important. And I guess it requires some context prior to the Kenny Beats battle. I'm not going to go too much into this, but I have been studying poker for a couple of years. In a nutshell, like, poker is a game. It's like, it's basically at its core, almost as peaceful as solving like Sudoku puzzles, which sounds weird because you see in the media, it's like this high intensity game where you're trying to like read people's minds. No, it's just statistical puzzles, yeah. But it's also highly variance game. It's a highly variance game because you can literally play as a good winning player for years, but you can go for a year and still come out negative, which is insane. Like, what other process like leaves you with like quote unquote negative results when you are, you know, a good player at that system?
Right.
The first thing you always try to do is like, there's this concept of like tilt and not being results oriented. And I was like getting really into that. There's like a lot of mental structuring around your poker game that you need to pay attention to, because most people who are very smart can easily just lose money because they're unable to control their emotions and play styles when suddenly they've lost like thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And so what does this have to do with music? Well, prior to the battles, I realized like I was seeing my peers, one of my friends won, and I was like immediately wanting to have the same achievement. I wanted that validation. I was like, wait a second, like I've been producing for a long time. I've put in the work. Like, I want to have people tell me I'm good and I want to get like visibility, et cetera, et cetera. And so, I might try to show these. I have like a few beats that I've also submitted to Kenny, the ones that people don't know about. I made it to the finalists like twice before. A few times I was not selected for a few of them. And during that like 2 to 3 week period, I think I was the most miserable I ever was. Like, I was so stressed. Like, every single Monday during his battles, it felt like this has to be the day where like I earn my like value as a producer or whatever nonsense I was thinking about.
Wow.
And so after the third time where like, I remember it was actually for when Sam Gellatry was judging a battle, like his eyes just kind of like stared blankly at my track, and I couldn't sleep that night. And I was like, what happened? Like, in the purest form, I always recognized like I was doing this because I love the process. I was doing it not for Sam Gellatry or Kenny Beats or whoever, but I was doing it for myself. And you know, we're human, obviously you care about what people think about your music.
Exactly.
But like, you know, people had given me positive feedback before. Like, people like my music generally, people were enjoying my ideas. So it was after that, like, it was sort of fueled out of this fervor. Two things happened. One was like, well, in my typical stubborn nature, well, I'm just going to try to figure out how to get better at these battles. You know, I'm obviously going to take their feedback to heart, but I'm going to try to like dissect and like try to figure out exactly what he's looking for. And so that weekend I was like making some like boom bap. I was listening to a bunch of like Ninth Wonder stuff, and I was literally playing sample roulette. I was giving myself an hour to go and make samples and practice. And then I made some stuff that I really enjoyed. And suddenly, like, for that month period, I kind of forgot what it was like to make something you genuinely got excited by. And I had that feeling return. And I was like, I'm getting these emotions again, the hook of the song. I'm like feeling, you know, your heart starts pumping faster because you're excited about what it's going to turn out to be and you can't wait to show people. I was doing this with sounds that I had never been used before. And so then I was like, hold up, I'm like having so much fun just like trying out new things and experimenting. I sort of just dug into that feeling in my stomach and I was like, this is actually all I really need. I feel like just growing as a producer and playing in that sandbox again, if I just did this for the rest of my time, I don't really need any more people to tell me if it's good or bad. Like, this is so fulfilling on its own. And so sort of by luck and sort of being in that headspace where I was trying to figure out why I was so miserable, you know, these things coincided. I mean, this sounds like a bad like fairy tale story, but seriously, the next battle was the first time I won. I literally went into that one, was like, wow, I don't even care like what happens. I just want to make something that, you know, I just want to see if something cool happens. And if I don't like if I can't get it to state I'm happy with by the end of the beat battle, that's fine. You know, I'm just going to put it, tuck it away and revisit it. But we're going to use these battles as a ground for creative experimentation. Because I hadn't experimented maybe for like a year and a half. I was getting into those loops. I had seriously plateaued. And so, yeah, to put it short, bluntly, like I was being results oriented. And it seems easy to point at like, oh, you shouldn't care about your streams and following and like who says this. It's very hard to ignore that when you see a lot of people getting it. And, you know, the ego always wants to have its fair share and then some.
Yeah.
But it's about finding like your own source of intrinsic joy and pleasure, because once you find that, like you're able, there's a certain dangerous high and pleasure that naturally comes from getting your ego stroked. And I think that can sometimes replace your own inherent desires for why you're doing something. This has happened. This has occurred to me prior to the battles. It's occurred to me even at post the Timbaland thing. Even I was like, I gotta send in more stuff that I'll like, and I was in my head again. But like, just run this thought experiment. I mean, maybe for some people the answer is yes. But let's just say like tomorrow I'm gonna tell you that you're just gonna win like 5 Grammys, and the whole world's gonna love your music, and you know all these producers you look up to are gonna give you a pat on the back and say, hey, dude, you're super dope. Whatever. Guess what? At the end of the day, you're still gonna have to write more music, and so. I'm like, why does it matter? Like, I am unbelievably grateful for the support. And like, it seriously always makes my day to get people telling me how much like they enjoy my music. And like, it's seriously humbling. But there needs to be, I think, a degree of separation. And because it's easy for those quote unquote results, even positive ones, to get in your head and start driving you away from the core reason why you might be doing something again. Like after, you know, coming to that, I feel like the past few months I've just been on this manic, crazed, inspirational run. I don't think I've ever produced this much in my entire 5 years, partially due to the quarantine, but partially because like every day I'm just excited to try new stuff. Like I just want to get better, not because I want to beat someone or like get to the top, but because it's fun to get better. And so that's good enough for me.
Yeah, thanks so much for being so open with that, because I think that's a really, really great story, a really great experience for people to learn from, because it's not about, really, it's not, you're not doing it, you are doing it for what other people think, because music is for people to listen to and enjoy, but you also have to do it for yourself. There's a mix engineer, you might be familiar with him, his name is Philip Tan.
Oh, why does he sound so familiar? What is he, has he worked on?
Oh, he's worked on a ton of stuff, Shine Bright Like a Diamond by Rihanna. He did that.
Phil Tan.
He's got a huge discography.
Yes.
Something that he said, and I love his mixing style. He can have so many things going on in a mix, but you can hear each one of them and they just sound so clear and they sound so wide and it sounds so big. He mixes more pop music and EDM and things like that, but it still was an amazing mix style. Anyway, he was doing this interview. They asked him why he got into music. Was it for the money? And he was like, oh, that's a joke. You know, if it was for the money, I definitely wouldn't be in music. I'd do it because I can literally listen to music all day. You know, I can literally make music. That's what anybody would want to do. That's such a great thing to him. He can create and listen to music all day long and get away with it, you know, and he loves that. And that's a great thing about music. It's about inspiring that creativity in yourself and then sharing that with other people. And also, it's easy, like you said, to get down because of external forces. There's been tracks that I've made that I listen to them and I'm like, this sucks. And those are the tracks that people say, man, I like that track that you made. Can I get it? And it's such a weird thing, but I like how you said that when you got out of your head about what they thought about you or that you didn't win the battle, that's when you won. It could just be a matter of coincidence or circumstance, but it could also be because you got out of your head and you were able to make something that wasn't reliant on what they thought of you.
Exactly. I think it's absolutely the latter. It's not like, I'm not saying like, oh, you just have to reject your results orientation and suddenly you'll get it. That's not at all what I'm saying.
Right.
I'm saying that the mindset and the baseline freedom that you get from not worrying about what other people think, or sorry, this is a small tangent, or even just like having a good session. Having a good session is a result. Okay. Like at its core, if you're just going to the day and being like, you know, if I like try get a little closer to the sound I'm trying to work on, or like come up with something that I haven't heard, that's an A for me for the day.
Yeah.
Like you build those up slowly, bit by bit. It's hard to see a world where you're not growing and eventually hopefully thriving as a producer.
Yeah.
It's just like, being in that state enables you inherently to perform better, in my opinion. So that's probably, you know, how maybe it ties into now suddenly after that, I was started to see a lot more visibility and success in air quotes. Yeah. Like it's just such a more comfortable mental state to be creative in. And that is like the core of it for me.
Oh yeah. Mentality has so much to do with success in general. Really. And not just in music and in your life. When you are able to, A, believe in yourself that I'm doing this because I enjoy it, not really depending on what other people think. What other people think is sort of important. Sure, it gets you through life and things like that, but not depending on it for your lifeblood. You know what I mean? You have to do it because you enjoy it and because it motivates you. And when you're able to do that, it'll take you a lot farther.
Absolutely.
I'm interested to know, is there anything else that you do? You said you're a software engineer too, which is, that takes definite level of creativity. But is there anything else that you do as far as creative endeavors are concerned?
I've always been interested in getting more into visual arts, but there's always like this guilt I feel being like, well, why would you spread yourself so thin when there's so much left in this craft to learn?
Oh, I know.
I think that's a bit of a fallacy, because I don't think, I think I do have time if I really wanted to commit to trying to get into another creative outlet. But yeah, for the time being, like most of the creativity, if not all of it, is expressed in my production right now. And it's definitely been more than like satisfactory for me as an outlet.
Yeah. And to be honest, I've kind of spread myself a bit thin with music and video and everything. And I enjoy both of them because I love it. I love telling a story. I love writing. I love the whole thing. And I'm starting to try to teach what I know.
That's
as
awesome.
Well. And that's why I started this podcast.
That's seriously so cool. I feel like it is, you know, there is actually quite a bit of merit to what you're doing. I find that like you're able to stay really productive if you have multiple things to do.
That's
like,
true. Keeps you out of trouble.
It's not so much about like, it's not about like putting 100% for the entire year into one thing. I think if you're just able to maintain general productivity for a large part of your day, because you have so many cool things that you're excited to work on, like that just feels really great. And so, you know, when I say I'm busy, I feel fine.
Oh,
I'm busy, yes, but I'm not burnt out by any means.
Yeah, I agree. No, I feel the same way. When you, and this is just something that I'm kind of interested in, because I kind of have this thing. When you listen to music, do you listen to it analytically? Because like I'll listen to music and I'll be like this in my head, so annoyed by how this vocal is or isn't tuned. Or I'll be just like, there's this little thing about the kick that just gets under my skin because I know how it was made. I know all the little details of it. Has that ever become a thing for you?
Yeah. So this is such a funny question, because I have some friends of mine who have that exact problem. To a almost a ridiculous effect. I feel so bad because they said like, dude, I can't even enjoy music in concerts anymore. Like, my mind just breaks it down. I cannot, like, appreciate the piece as a whole. Surprisingly for me, like, I can kind of turn that part of my brain off.
Yeah.
There's still a part of a lot of music that just, you just close your eyes and kind of get lost in it.
Especially if it's really great.
And, like, you don't have to, like, separate everything out into its own layer and figure out how it works. That being said, like, since I've started producing, there's no doubt the first thing my brain is doing is, like, figuring out, like, thinking about their mixing and thinking about, like, what layers they're doing and what they're doing to create these sounds. Yeah. But, like, you kind of do it once or twice and then kind of chill out and start appreciating the piece for what it is again. I personally haven't had too big of an issue with it. I wonder if that's also because I do have perfect pitch, so I hear, like, notes are, like, very positional to me. So when things are out of tune, it's, like, obvious. But, like, there are things that are, like, naturally out of tune for aesthetic reasons. And so I can totally see past that. In fact, sometimes I've, like, refused to auto-tune my friends because I'm like, dude, I like how you sound more naturally. And so it's just like, I hope it's not as, like, callous as me just saying, oh, just don't think
Right. No, I don't think so. And I think I'm pretty much the same way. I can listen to something and usually, like, I might hear a little thing like, man, they could have done this and made their drop so much better by just cutting out this little part before. To give it more impact or something.
Yeah.
But no, like you said, I can listen to and enjoy music as well.
That's
but
awesome.
You have perfect pitch. See, that's something that I've always been envious of, people who have perfect pitch. And I think it's something, I know a lot of people say you can't develop it once you get past a certain age, but I think I have the foundations for it because just being so musical all my life.
Yes.
And every once in a while, I'll hear a door squeak. And then I'll be like, oh, that's the note, beginning note from this song. And I'll go, I'll listen to the song and I'm always dead on. But as far as going boo and saying that's C.
That was a G.
I'm not. That's crazy. That's so crazy to me.
I could just name C, but the thing is, like, how do you know I'm telling the truth?
Yeah, that's true too, but I trust.
No, you can run it through a tuner later. I've done, like, that was one of my, like, party tricks where people just, like, played notes on a piano where the keys were labeled and I would just name them. So you had some reference. But to your point, like, there is actually, with perfect pitch, it is actually, you can develop a, like, something that is basically what perfect pitch is. And it's just really good relative pitch. And so the only difference is that you need some anchor note. Like, I have to play a C for you. And then you'll know what all the rest of the notes are. And then you basically have perfect pitch once you hear that one note. So to me, like, what's the difference? Like, as a musician, if you train it to that extent, like, and then... The only difference is that you have to hear some note for, like, 5 seconds, like, and then you're good to go. Like, it's absolutely a learned skill. And it's not, I don't want to take stuff for granted, but it hasn't felt that useful in terms of just raw composition. It's very good in transcribing stuff. And so I think it maybe perfect pitch helps in just overall getting more proficient as a listener and being able to, you know, write chords. It's felt like such a intrinsic part of my life that it's hard for me, I guess, to imagine what it's like without it in the least condescending way possible.
Totally. I've always thought it was really cool because it's something that people who have perfect pitch. Are you familiar with Rick Beato?
I'm not.
Okay.
Please let me please
check him out on YouTube. Rick Beato, like beat with an O at the end of it. He has relative pitch, not perfect pitch. But he taught his son perfect pitch.
Oh, I've seen this. As soon as I saw his face, I was like, doesn't he have that, like, doesn't one of his kids, like, have an incredible, like, ear?
And he can play,
yes,
like, chords stacked on top of each other, or literally just a random cluster of notes, and his son will pick all of them out at the snap of a finger. It's really, really impressive.
Yeah.
And it's something I'm determined to develop, even if it's not that perfect pitch, at least a really... excellent relative pitch, and I'll get it. I'm gonna get it. But
I believe in you.
Thanks. I mean, I can hear if something's out of tune with a song or something like that. Of course, you kind of need to have that skill to even be slightly musical.
Yeah.
What is one thing, one action that people can take? Young producers that are trying to get their feet wet, starting out. What is one action that they can take right now that will help them in their music production journey?
Wow, this one's hard. Okay, even on the smallest scale, I think what's helped me a lot is finding a way to, one, chunk my next steps into something that's tolerable for me as like a goal achieving human to bite down on, and not like look up at the peak of Mount Everest and be like, well, that's going to take forever and get discouraged. But to really like find that next subdivision. This is a very like engineering way of looking at it.
That's fine.
But find the next subdivision of work that you can take on and cut it down as little or as large as you need it to be, and really mark that down as like decorate that goal as with fanfare and confetti, because it's something like celebrating those little wins, no matter how small, I think is the only effective way for me as personally to have gone as far as I have so far. I think as soon as you've stalled yourself on looking at how far the journey is, and the journey is honestly not even, there's not even maybe a finite length, it's just infinite, versus like being able to A, compare yourself to where you were yesterday, and B, have a goal for tomorrow that is small enough where it's achievable, but still ambitious enough where you're not just like doing something trivial. Like that sort of general agenda setting, I feel like has been really, really critical for me. And a lot of other people that I've talked to who are just like in ruts sometimes are stuck because they can't stop comparing themselves, or are unable to take or see the next step is so large and tedious. So I'm just like, well, that step is entirely defined by you.
Exactly.
So if you smush it down and really just like even in like a display of fake excitement, start to like integrate that smaller goal setting into your life, I think it will help you first and foremost get out of a rut if you're already in one, and two, maintain that momentum for a really, really long time.
I really like that advice. That's really, really great advice, man. There's something you said, celebrate the small wins too. And yeah. I think that's important, because a lot of people, they don't realize that the little things that they do, or they don't allow them to matter in their mind.
Yeah.
They just become tedium. They become the everyday grind that you do. But those little things are steps that so many people just don't take.
Yeah.
They live their life on autopilot. And
it's
great to be able to make those little small steps and celebrate them, even if it's just in your mind. You don't have to go and, you know, throw a party or anything, but in your mind, I did this. Yeah. And then move on to the next thing, take another step forward and another step forward. And in 3 months, in 6 months, in a year, you can look back at where you were and be like, look at all the improvement I've
done. Yeah, that's so true.
And and it's something that I've learned. I can't say that I learned it recently, but I started applying it consciously recently. And that has helped me so much. I'm going to share with you this whole AVPers thing that I'm doing here. Mm-hmm. I came up with the idea in 2014. And I mean, I was just a teenager at the time, but I wanted to do it. But I never really, you know, took organized steps. I said I was going to do it. I did little things, but just in like the last 2 years, maybe, and even more so in the last few months, I've done exactly what you said. I've made organized goals, and I've celebrated those little small wins. That's what's carried me and made me able to get this far, which isn't very far. It's a lot shorter than I could have been if I had started when I actually had the plan and the idea. But I've made so much progress, and it's been just so mentally healthy for me to be able to see, you know, the progress that I've made, because I've intentionally looked at it and said, wow, I did that. Okay, wow, I did this next thing. Tomorrow I'm going to do this. Wow, I did that. And then if maybe I fall off for a day, okay, I'm not going to do it again. And then, wow, I did that. And it's so, so helpful.
That's really super great to hear. It's I think even more, one of the more subtle ones is even just like, comparing yourself to what you could have been at a certain time. Like that's also super unproductive. Like you are here, you are creating an episode right now. Like literally what else could you ask for? Exactly. Like you're doing it.
Exactly. Thanks, by the way.
Of course, I'm excited.
Something I noticed too, like when I make a track, for instance, I'll spend hours on a track and then I might come back next week and still be working on that same track.
Right.
I don't see myself as great at just sitting down for an hour and slamming out an incredible track. And this is more of a personal question. You do really decent at that, I think. You come on Twitch and you start with some drums, and then by the end of the track, you've got an amazing piece. And sure, you still got to add. I've heard you some of your tracks with freaking phone dials and like little soda pop cans opening and stuff like that. So everything isn't, it's not fully prettied up.
Yeah.
But is there anything that you can maybe help me out with on that?
For
as well?
Sure.
As
I guess first of all, it's like I wouldn't try to set like specific standards for how far you can get a track out. There's plenty of times on stream where I'm like sweating because it's like, oh wait, this is like not coming out good. So one is like, you kind of embrace all the bad times. Maybe you just saw a few of my tracks where like, you know, something good did come out. And sometimes it is like the streams have been fun for that reason, because like a lot of surprisingly good stuff has developed out of like a very short session. But there are also some streams where I like get nothing done, or even all the stuff you don't see me do on stream, which are just like garbage and I like scrap. The thing with streams, I think that maybe makes the success rate a little higher, is that I feel compelled to commit because people are watching, and I'm like, well, I'm not gonna if I make like a bunch of ideas and bail, like what kind of like stream is that? So that's one. It's kind of nerve wracking. It can help to like kind of put yourself under that pressure.
Yeah.
Two, my philosophy for production is really just like expanding it horizontally as fast as I can, and like shading in the primary colors as soon as I can, so that I don't lose the overall vibe of the track. In the ideal state, when you're truly in that production flow state, every single thing that you write is inspiring. You're just gonna, you might hear me on stream like, oh, I hear this at this part. Yeah. Part. Like the best sessions are the ones where you're just constantly hearing the entire track, and like it like writes itself. Mm. Yeah, that doesn't happen that often. The way to get around that is one, forcing like the structure out, even if you're like, this isn't as detailed as I'd like it to be. Like, make it, who cares if it's boring and repetitive? Like, get your layout done so that you're not stuck detailing one section. And then listen to it. Like, just keep on listening to it from the beginning. And as soon as you hear something that, like, you feel like is weird, make a note. As soon as you hear something that's weird, make another note. And then go through that list. Like, it's a very methodical thing now that I think about it. You just go through that list and you start chipping at things where you have ideas on how to fix it.
Okay, cool.
And over time, like, you'll get more and more techniques where you're like, it's not even something you have to know. You know how to fix it. Like, it'll be part of the process. But you'll hear plenty of times I'm on stream and I'm working on an idea and I'm like stuck. And I'm like, I don't know how to segue these sections. Let me either listen to some reference tracks. Let me try like maybe just like putting a gap here, throwing things until it works. And like, maybe that experimentation for me is a little bit quicker because of how much I've used Ableton. But at its core, it's no different. So, oh, and the third thing is like, seriously, don't be afraid just to like bin the project for now. Don't delete it. Don't delete anything. That's my number one rule.
And come back to it later.
But I come back to things all the time. Like, I don't think I ever write an entire track from start to beginning where I'm okay sending it out. Yeah. I will get it to maybe 50 to 75% done. Store it, cycle through a new idea, or go back to an old one. So I have like maybe 8 or 9 projects right now that are constantly being rotated, and I can just chip on each one. If I run out of ideas for one, that's fine. I'm just gonna go back and like do some other things. Yeah. Like, it's a very utilitarian and productivity maximizing way of going about it, but it works fairly well in my experience.
Yeah, it does. It does. I do the same thing. Something that I suffer with is like I'll hear a section of a track, or I'll make a section of a track, and then I listen to it, and maybe I listen to it a few times, and I get, like you said, that's what the track is now in my head. That's what it sounds like. It doesn't need anything else. It doesn't want anything else, and it's dead at that point. That's what I called ear numb. I've become numb to the sound of the track, and that's it. So like you said, if you flush it out really quick, force yourself to put everything out there, then you can build on it. And
your fatigue is real, and so as you get faster, you know, it helps a lot because you don't have a chance to listen to it as often. But yeah, it'll come with time, no doubt.
I love talking about this.
No, it's all good. I really appreciate this. This is really fun, actually.
Really sweet. Maybe I can get you on sometime. I'd love to, again.
For sure. For sure. Okay. Let me know.
Yeah. Where can people find you? Where can they find you, connect with you? Where can they find your work, your art, and follow you if they want to?
My biggest platform is on YouTube right now, so... It's just on OKSammy or Oksami, whatever you want to call it. But most of my discography is on SoundCloud, where I'm not as worried about like getting it by copyrights. So it's SoundCloud/itsOKSammy. as well as on IG, same place. I don't know how, I don't have like a Discord banded link, so. But if you go on any of those platforms, you'll probably be able to find a link to my Discord where you can just also DM me.
And I'll put them in, I'll put those links in the show notes too. That way people can just click on them, including the Discord.
If you sure. Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Okay. Hey, no problem. But okay, guys, check him out too. You won't, trust me, you won't be disappointed if you check out my man. He's got incredible, incredible talent. And you're gonna get big if you keep it up. So much love in that regard, and I'm looking forward to it.
I appreciate
Maybe
it.
Maybe I can get you on when you're producing for, you know, some huge major artist, and we can talk about that.
That would be exciting. I would be done. I'll talk to you soon. Let me know if you need anything else.
All right, I will do.
Sweet, will do. Take care, man. Let's keep in touch.
Man, I love that conversation. I hope you learned as much as I did from this show. The biggest takeaways that I pulled from this episode and really stood out to me, when you're listening to music, dissect the music that you enjoy listening to. See what makes it unique and learn how to make it actively, like literally have a list of things that you don't know how to create and work on creating those things, figuring out how they were made. Find the thing that you don't know how to make and reverse engineer it. Learn how to make it, and then you have a new skill, a new tool in your toolbox, so to speak, that you can use in your music. The more you do that, the more variety you'll be able to employ in your tracks. A lot of times, taking that very active, calculated approach will also help you fight the lack of inspiration that we suffer as creators so much. Number two, and this has been mentioned on the show before, you have to be driven by your joy for your work. Not by other people's opinions, other people's recognition. You have to do it because you enjoy doing it. Remember why you started and use that as your motivation. If you're making art only for other people, you'll never find yourself and your sound. And you'll never attract the people who love your work. Remember, the people that you attract are the people who actually love what you do. They love it because it's your style. If you're focused on just pleasing other people or having people say great things about your work, you're going to end up attracting nobody because you're going to be trying to please so many different people that you won't be pleasing anybody. If you create the things that you resonate with, you'll attract the people that enjoy your work because it's yours. And lastly, and very importantly, celebrate your wins, even your small ones, especially your small ones. Set small, measured goals, accomplish them, and feel great about that. Look back in a week, in a month, so on, and you'll be absolutely amazed at how much progress you've made. So that's the episode for today, guys. I highly recommend that you check out Eric on all the places. The links are in the show notes at avpeers.com/session4. And keep your eyes out for him. He's going to do great things. I know it. Check him out on Spotify, YouTube, and on SoundCloud. He has a lot of amazing stuff, remixes and things there that you can check out. But keep your eyes out for him. He's going to do great things. I know it. Please subscribe to the show if you haven't already. And I'd really, really appreciate it if you left a rating and review over on iTunes and Google Podcasts. It just helps other people to find the show and ultimately helps more people. So until next time, I'm David Hawkins, and I can't wait to serve you in the next episode of the AV Peers Podcast. Have an amazing week, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the AV Peers Audiovisual Production Podcast at www.avpeers.com.